bottle of wine is poured, you know you reached the What You've Been Watching podcast. I am your host, the velour, marvelous Mike Dudley, joined as always by my co-host, cohort, and Gimp Boy.
Man, yeah, now I can't come in the way I wanted to. I was going to say the very seductive, marvelous Mike D, that's not me though. The very seductive MD3. What's going on out there in podcast land, everybody? As you can see, you are locked in for a very special, very sensual episode of the What You Been Watching podcast. We are broadcasting from the northeast side of Tallahassee. That's what you right. know about that in What You Been Watching Studio 3. We global, baby. We out chill. Big shout out to Kesta, always bright, for the lovely intro music. But more than that, big shout out to the quadruple threat himself.
You already know what's coming.
MR period A1 period. Go ahead and write that down. Mr. A1 for all the flavors he's bringing to this podcast today. Man, we are so grateful for it, my dude. Custom beats, anything you need, a1reality.music@gmail.com.
That's
you
right.
can find him on Facebook. You can just he's out there, man. The man's a quadruple threat. He's a hardworking gentleman. And, man, we owe you some real gratitude, because I say this not as the man's friend. He is a friend of mine, no doubt. Dealing with him from a business aspect to get said custom beats, impeccable customer service.
Oh, and professionalism all the way.
And I mean that truly. Like, was very patient with my indecisiveness. And yeah, so I appreciate him back and forth. We gave him like a wide genre of like 43 different types of music. And he was like, can you help me narrow it down a little bit? Yeah, I guess. So, big shout out to the homie, Mr. A1. Genuinely appreciate you, brother.
Yeah, man.
You can find us at whatchabeenwatchinpodcast@gmail.com. Please, seriously, write us in. We are the love line for all your romantic queries. Write us in ASAP. Shout out to MK Dudley Art for the lovely banner. That's all the housekeeping we're going to do for this episode.
That's right. Oh, Facebook.com/Dudley Bros Podcast, or out there on Instagram at whatchabeenwatchin. Also, you know, we out there. I was selling glass roses by the side of the street for like 3 for $5.
I was helping ducklings cross the street. Nothing monetary about it. Good Samaritan stuff. Well, man, this is a very, very, very specially numbered episode. As you can see, this is episode number 69. So
nice.
We had to do something a little bit fun for the listeners out there.
Because we're 12.
I mean, pretty much. Let's be honest here. We lean into certain things pretty well. So
yeah, this is going to be a very sexually based and romantic based episode of the What You've Been Watching podcast. So, you know, we're trying to cover all our bases. We don't want to make it all about filth and grime and lust and nipples and sucking and disgusting. Ew. We want to bring in love. We want to bring in relationships. We want to bring in emotionality.
That's right.
So
spectrum of things.
Yeah, yeah. So we are going to get to the $1 million question, I promise you, and it's going to be a deep dive that we've been meaning to do for a long time.
A long time.
So, but in the meantime, in between time, sir, I have some movie-based romantic queries that you might want to ponder upon.
Okay, so like a little diet non-mail bag, just the mail came from you. I like this.
Sure,
I like
this.
So, I enjoyed that episode a lot. I just listened to it again today. It was a really good one.
I mean, nothing but perfection from my end, sir.
I'm telling you, yeah. His back is tired, is what he's saying, from carrying the team. But shout out, keep writing this in. We actually had some questions that somebody wrote a whole, so shout out to Ashley, but man, that was fun to
actually. That's the stuff we're looking for.
Yeah, seriously, write us on.
Make us think rather than talk about our usual silly nonsense.
Yeah. So anyways, go ahead, buddy.
All right, so let's talk about some movie stuff. Let's see. Here's a good one. What is the sexiest non-sexy movie? So like, a movie that turns you on that isn't based on sex or titillation.
Oh, man.
I have a list myself if you want me to kick some off.
Yeah, go ahead and kick some off so I can. Of course, you would have a list.
Of course
I have
a list.
I've had this list for months and years.
I've been waiting to talk about this.
Yeah. No, go ahead, though.
So first on my list is Disney's Robin Hood.
Well, yeah. That is kind of, they knew what they were doing drawing that fox. So.
It is, it is very Errol Flynn of them to, you know, I mean, let's face it, That fox is pretty goddamn handsome.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. I see what you're saying.
And maybe, questionably, the start of furries. I don't know. You may be the judge.
But here's the thing is I could say that Jasmine was – that movie's not about sex or titillation, but, like, Jasmine I thought was really hot.
Sure. Okay. But I would even argue that she's meant to be – maybe not sexy because it's a kids movie, but at least like attractive, you know, like yeah. It's meant to make, you know, little kids admit like, yeah, Jasmine's really pretty.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm trying to define the line here, though. Let's one see. To walk.
Let me see. Oh, another good one for me. Before Sunrise. Very sexual in the or titillating in the mental aspect in terms of it's about two people, not necessarily fucking, but they're mentally having intercourse. They're getting to know each other. They're asking hard-hitting questions. They're, you know, giving their philosophy on life and stuff okay. like that. So it's intercourse of the mind.
Mind sex, as Dead Press says.
Yeah. You know, the one Julie Delpy Ethan Hawke. Yeah.
Yeah. Never seen it, but.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Everyone says it's a must. It's on every top 100 list is that trilogy.
I mean, it's, do you like Richard Linklater?
Yeah.
It's a very Richard Linklater film.
Yeah. He's a really talented dude.
Yeah. Let's see. What else have I got here?
Yeah, I can't think of one. I mean, obviously, like Jasmine, I found, but I'm trying to think of a movie that anything that's like, I'm just trying to think of something food based where it's like, you know what I mean? Where it's not, I can't think of a movie like that though, where the food is just a substitute for, I guess, Blades of Glory is a movie. I don't find it attractive though, but like that movie is just one long gay joke without insertion, you know? So I don't know. I don't know, man. I really can't think. I'm trying to think of like a food movie where they glorify the food or something like that in terms of like being really seductive. But
okay, so I don't know. Maybe ooh, Chocolat.
Yeah, that's okay. See, okay. I was on to something there.
Yeah, okay. I see what you're saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
Chocolat is also Johnny Depp's incredibly attractive. Yeah. No. Yeah. Chocolat's a good one. Like you're American. It's chocolate. I saw Chocolat.
Chocolat.
Yeah.
Shut up, Meg.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm with you now. Yeah, I'd say that.
Okay. Any others come to mind? Or?
I know there's one I'm missing that, I mean, I know that there was, like, weird, for lack of a better word, like, animation and stuff that I found to be attractive or whatever because I knew they drew it certain ways. You draw big eyes and just a curve in any certain kind of direction. It's like, oh, this is supposed to be this, you know?
That's a very sexual curve. I like your 2D lines.
Yeah. No, I can't think of one.
The only other one I was going to mention was The Fast and the Furious because it's just very obviously car porn.
Yeah, it's car
porn.
Yeah.
It's just something for gearheads to jerk off to. Like,
yeah,
yeah, you know,
true.
You can really do that in a Mazda S10, right?
Yeah, that's true. When that Skyline hit, that was everybody was talking about that. Like the souped up
or
Mitsubishi.
The Mitchie Lancers and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, one time I inverted my Mitsubishi Lancer one time. It was pretty dope.
I feel like there's a lot of David Ayer's movies. Who directed Suicide Squad, the first one. He directed Fury. I feel like because he was in the military, and it's certainly not sexual, but I'm sure to a lot of people that are really into guns, like he really goes through the process of selecting like guns and the arsenal that they're going to be using and how they look on camera and the noises that they make. A little bit they do that with John Wick as well. It's usually they just kind of like, I'm looking for something for dessert. And it's like they're talking about shotguns.
Sure, right.
You know,
right,
and it's
right,
like,
right.
Oh, this. So something like that, though. But I know David Ayer's movies typically like Fury or if you actually look at what they had for Deadshot in Suicide Squad.
Right.
It's kind of
gun porn action porn or something.
Yeah,
I could see that.
Something like that. Then,
yeah.
But other than that, I'm out, though. I got people that are into those kind of things are like food. I think there's a movie I haven't seen yet, but I've seen the trailer and the YouTube version of it probably 1,000 times, which I want to watch with you. It's called Cooking Up a Storm.
Okay.
Michael, we'll talk about that another day, but we got to put that on the list.
All right, we'll put a pin on that.
All right,
be continued.
Yeah, Cooking Up a Storm. So sounds great. Right. Yeah, it's
okay.
A dope movie.
Let's see. I think we've talked about this before, but maybe it's worth reviewing. What was your first movie crush?
Oh, that's Jessica Rabbit.
Oh.
And then Jasmine. Yeah, Jessica Rabbit and Jasmine.
Good pull. You do have a thing for 2D lines.
I like animation, man. It's Other than that, though, April, to be honest, April O'Neil was another one.
Okay.
I'm such a dork. No.
I'm such a dork. I want to ask you whether it's the movie version or the cartoon version.
Yes. Probably the movie version. Yeah. The movie version more.
Okay, Judith Hogue or...
The first one. Yeah. Okay. I mean, they're both, yeah. Either one. Judith Hogue, who's the other lady?
Name escapes me right now. Yeah. No disrespect.
Yeah, no disrespect. I know we had a whole deep dive. One of my favorite episodes is the Ninja Turtles episode. I should remember that. Other than that, though, yeah, I don't remember. Yeah, probably Jessica Rabbit's the first one I can truly remember being like, there is something about this lady.
There's two things about that lady. I'm looking right at them.
No, hold on. You can't get to omit that question for yourself.
No. I was going to answer it. For me, it was Jennifer Connelly in Labyrinth.
Okay.
I saw that when I was probably, I must have been 7 or 8 years old. And like, you know how as a little kid, it's always like, you know, my mom's pretty, my grandma's pretty, you know, my aunt's pretty, my sister's pretty. She was the first girl that I ever saw where I was like, she's pretty.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like.
Yeah, Jennifer Connelly. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm trying to think of one that.
Also, conversely, David Bowie made me have a lot of questions about myself for a long time. Not going to lie, just saying.
Yeah, I mean, he'll do that.
I never realized how prominent his codpiece was until I was like much older and I was like, well, damn, like.
This is a kid's movie? Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't like. I'll tell you about it. I've told you before. I was never really like. I thought the kissing scenes in movie, and I still kind of feel this way, they're just like superfluous and they just are unnecessary in a lot of it. And I think a lot of sex scenes are too.
Okay.
As even if they're like, as a director, if they're trying to shoot it tastefully, there's a couple that have been done or that are incredibly realistic. There's a movie with, what's her name? I think it's called Blue Valentine with Ryan Gosling and, she was in Venom. Blonde hair. Yep. Yeah. Either way. Can't think of her name right now. It escapes me.
Something Williams.
Yeah. S. Williams, whatever it is.
Anyway. Because it's Brian Williams' daughter.
Yeah.
Allison Williams.
No, that's not it. That's not it. But either way. But
Andy Williams.
No, but there's a scene in that movie that is very realistic. They're like on a brink of a divorce, and he's trying to save the marriage to get this hotel room, and she's just kind of like, all right, you just have sex with me, and he's just... Like, if you're not, he thinks that she's into it, and then he realizes, like, oh, she's just doing this for me.
Right.
And it's just, like, the way it pivots is incredibly realistic. But for the most part, as a kid even, like, yeah, girls are gross, and they have cooties and all that stuff. And but I always truly thought, like, a lot of the kissing and sex scenes were just unnecessary. It's like, I get it.
See, that ties into one of the next questions I was going to ask is there's a huge movement now, especially among the, like, generation younger than us, to have, like, sex scenes and nudity completely removed from films because they find it superfluous or insulting or it's not very sex positive or I don't know. I don't pay attention to what those idiots say.
We're just here to judge.
That's right. I paid $20 goddamn dollars to see this movie. I better see some boobs in this. That's all I know.
Yeah.
Not really, but you know what I'm like, do you think that that's a trend that's going to take hold, or is that something that...
I don't even care. Like, if it's a horror movie and you want to get into, like, a 70s porno slasher style, like, I get it. I'm not saying it doesn't have a... I just think a lot of times when you know it's going to happen, like, oh, the sexual tension has been palpable this whole movie. I wonder if the guy gets the girl at the end. Oh, turns out they do.
Right.
I don't mind the kiss at the end when they, you know, fireworks are going off in the background, they save the day, because it just puts a nice bow on everything. Right. I'm not talking about that. But, like, when you just... go off into this like weird sex scene and it's like, yeah, it's bound to happen this whole time. Like, and then they're trying to do it tastefully. I don't know. It drags the movie down. I have nothing to do with sex positivity or anything. It's just to me, the cadence of the movie, it's like, all right, I get it.
Right.
I get it.
Right,
and rarely have I seen something that really keeps me engaged in the terms of like, wow, that was really tastefully done, where it's like, wow, I can really see the love or the chemistry between the actors on then, or I can feel the emotion of the characters, what they were trying to be, much like a fight scene. Like, what are you trying to tell me through it?
Right.
If it's just like, we're going to cut, we're going to ramp, and if we're just doing this for the sake of doing it.
Of just showing boobs and butts, then what's kind of what the point?
Yeah, and into soft Kenny G music, like, we're good. We can take that out, where you're going to have the overlay of one person while you move up their body in this, like,
right.
We can skip all that.
Right.
We've seen it 1,000 times. That's more what it is.
I was thinking of, like you were talking about how the sex sort of like it slows down the pace of the movie. Like, I was thinking of the movie When Harry Met Sally, when Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal, like, they have sex like halfway through the movie. You know, they finally, but like that's part of the process, and that's yeah. sort of, it's like they don't just end the movie there. Like they show the complications that arise from like, oh, we were friends and now we're fucking, and like how do we deal with that? So like, and they don't even have to show the sex scene. It's literally they show them kissing, and then, you know, smash cut to like fade in, they're sleeping in the same bed, and Meg Ryan has this like really crazy look on her face, like, what the fuck did I just do?
You know? No, that's fine. I don't even mind, like,
if but I'm saying, like, there's a way to do, yeah. like, in, like, to imply or to show, like, sexual tension or sexual gratification without being, I don't know, lewd about it. And I know that sound weird coming
yeah,
from me.
Yeah, no, it's, I don't even, it's not even the graphic nature of it all. And it's just, to me, it's a pacing thing. It's sometimes just like, all right, we're going to do this again. Like, for example, that scene in Top Gun. Like, that brings the movie to a fucking screeching
halt. Oh, when they start playing Take My Breath Away
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, like, and I get it. It's, like, it's an iconic scene. But, like, for whatever reason, that movie stands out of that. But that exact style of shot has been done so many
right,
times
right.
before.
The
that
soft
it's like,
blue lighting.
Like, come
and
on,
the,
man.
Right.
Like, I get it.
The satin bed sheets and the wind blowing and the,
yeah.
you know, windows are open. Yeah.
It's just, like, shit like that. It's just, like, all right, I get it. And it's not hot. It's not, it fucks up the pace of the movie.
It's a little cliche,
it's
too.
Cliche. Yeah. You knew it was going to happen. Like, I wonder if it's in Tom Cruise's contract to get the girl. Like, I bet it is. You know, and I don't even mind that, like, grand romantic gestures really stand out. For example, when he went to the door in Jerry Maguire. He was like, you right. had me at hello. It's
right.
a great scene.
Right, right.
You know, there's all kinds of scenes. The scene, as corny as it is, in Love Actually, with the signs and everything.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah,
like, corny, it's weird that the guy, we talked about it previously, that the dude's like, hey.
Oh, he's a dick.
Yeah, he's a dick in that scene. But it's a really romantic, like, stuff like that I don't mind. The boombox and Say Anything. That stuff I'm all for. Be
sure.
creative. Show the character who he is. People willing to, hey, man, this is either going to be a wild success and this is a true gesture, or I'm going to get the cops called on me. That stuff I'm all for.
Well, but here's the problem. Here's my problem with the grand romantic gestures thing is, like, I always put it to the Ryan Gosling or Danny DeVito test. Like, take any grand romantic gesture in any romantic movie, you know, like Lloyd Dobler holding the boombox above his head and Say Anything.
Right.
Or like, specifically, Ryan Gosling climbing the Ferris wheel in The Notebook or something like that and just being like, well, I'm going to kill myself if you don't go out with me. It's cute and it's hot because it's Ryan Gosling. If you insert Danny DeVito into that, it's weird and creepy and the girl's like spraying him with bear mace. Like, ew, get away from me. So, like,
I guess.
Like, I don't know. Like, I just have a problem with, like, this wild expectation that it puts on both women and men of, like, oh, well, all you got to do is just go over the top. And, like, that's not necessarily the case. Like, it's a dangerous line to walk, you know?
I guess it's, I mean, obviously in movies it's different, but I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't as mind it as much as long as I believed, for whatever reason, that Danny DeVito was truly, to me, it's the character's motivation. And you're right, maybe if it's some, but if it's some stranger he just met, then, like, you're right, yes, it might not play that way.
Right.
But, I don't know, it's, Grant, I don't know, I was the person that stopped traffic in the middle of my own car and just jumped out to go steal flowers for somebody. So, I don't know, maybe in my own mind, like, stuff like that is one thing in my hopeless romantic days, but I don't know. We're way off subject to what we were
sorry,
talking about originally,
sorry.
But I get
talking to the What You've Been Watching yeah. podcast.
No, in terms of, like, sex scenes, I don't even remember the original question, but
oh, is the trend of sex scenes and nudity in movies going to go away, or is that kind of something here that's here to stay? I would argue that you're always going
to
have
to
that
degree.
Type of movie. You know what I
yeah.
mean? Where it's like, ooh, I'm going to go see some butts, or, you know, like, we all remember being teenagers and being like going to see American Pie because we got to see Shannon Elizabeth tits. You know, like, that was our first foray.
It's
like
Porky's, like, or whatever.
Yeah,
yeah.
Or yeah, yeah, exactly. Or Revenge of the Nerds or what have
right.
you, where it's like, it's the teen sex comedy that's a little raunchy, but also, you know, like, you're going to see some cool stuff, you know?
Yeah, I'm fine with stuff like that. I just mean sometimes it just feels unnecessary. And it's not
sure.
like I'm grossed out by it, or it's just like, all right, man, like, we can cut this part of the movie. We get it. So, but no, I don't think it's going to go away, though. I think it'll probably evolve to something else, but there's just ways to go around it. Like, does it really serve the plot for you to show this? And, you know, like, to me, as tastefully as it is, those are just times that even as a kid and even today, I just kind of look at my watch like, all right, I get it. Even like The Eternals, I appreciate that they did a sex scene in the movie The Eternals
because
right. it was a Disney movie and it's a Marvel movie.
Right, right, right.
And they had to, so that was about, but even then that went on too long. It's like, okay, we're going to do a sex scene in a Marvel movie. Oh, okay. All right. And then it just went on about a minute too long.
So you mentioned earlier, you know, these big romantic gestures and some pretty, you know, crucial people in the rom-coms genre, you know, Lloyd Dobler, stuff like that. In the 90s, there was a surge of romantic comedies. I mean, you couldn't, every 6 weeks there was another one coming out. I mean, right. there was a deluge of romantic comedies. So, with that in mind, who would you say is the king and queen of romantic comedies? Maybe not necessarily of the 90s, but...
Okay, because I think there's a phase where you could give it to a lot of different people.
Okay. Like an it girl or an it boy.
Yeah, I would say Julia Roberts has got to come to mind.
Oh, yeah.
Meg Ryan has got to come to mind.
Sure,
She wasn't in a tremendous amount. Well, she was... kind of typecast.
But I mean, she was in the big ones, you know, Harry Met Sally, yeah. Sleepless in Seattle.
You Got Mail.
Courage Under Fire.
Yeah, she's in You Got Mail too, right?
Tom Hanks. You Got Mail. Yeah.
Yeah, so those are three really big movies. So I would say that. Sandra Bullock had some.
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
People will disagree. And like, Ryan Reynolds wasn't really Ryan Reynolds as we know him until Deadpool hit. Not that he was in... He had a couple like hit movies, but
I would argue maybe Waiting probably put him on.
But that movie successfully, he was like, "Hey, who is this guy?" And then he was on Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place, and so that's
this Thursday on NBC.
Yeah, but I mean, like his movies though didn't really take off. So like, I think Sandra Bullock had a phase of being that girl in terms of romantic comedies. She also kind of a lot of people I feel do that early in their career. She had done other things like Speed. And
Demolition Man.
She had done other things and then kind of fell into like The Proposals and even, I guess, Miss Congeniality isn't really a romantic comedy, but
it is.
She's done a couple of them. I know she had a couple. Reese Witherspoon's another one who kind of became the it girl for a while in terms of like Sweet Home Alabama and kind of
Home Is Where the Heart Is and
a lot of stuff. So currently, I don't really know in terms of romantic comedies. They're certainly have changed. I mean, Rachel McAdams in The Notebook was a really big one. But I'd say overall, I might have to go. My initial reaction is Julia Roberts.
Okay, that's yeah. I mean, Runaway Bride.
Molly Ringwald's the.
Ooh.
Molly Ringwald's the queen, though.
That's true. 16 Candles.
Yeah, she's kind of the
Breakfast
queen.
Club. That's a good pull, actually. I might have to.
That or who was in His Girl Friday?
My Girl Friday.
His Girl Friday. It's an old movie about the
Marilyn Monroe.
No. Bet something. Betty Davis.
Betty Davis. Yeah. Oh, it is Betty Davis. Yes.
Yeah, she's incredible in that movie, by the way.
And she was kind of the it girl. Yeah. She was always the romantic interest in a lot of those movies.
Kind of keep up with the fellas kind of thing.
Like, I'm one of the boys, too. Yeah.
So, yeah, I would guess, either Molly Ringwald or Julia. You can see, like, my point is you can kind of see the, like, it starts here, and then I need to trace the lineage back before Betty Davis, but it's a... there's a lineage of it was passed to somebody and they overlap a little bit. And then you'll have maybe two, three movies in a row that are kind of like that, or two movies. And then you'll do a third movie and then you go back to it kind of to the well for a thing.
Right. Like it was
like Hugh Grant was the guy for a while.
Hugh Grant was the guy. That was my number one pick for like the it rom-com dude was Hugh Grant. Second, I think would probably be early Matthew McConaughey. Cause he did.
Yeah.
I mean, so many different movies.
Yeah. Then
Tom Hanks was, because he didn't do a lot, but the ones that he did are seminal works in terms of, you know, like that was the standard for romantic comedies for decades was like, we're just going to do Sleepless in Seattle and then we're going to do, you know, redo it and recall it You've Got Mail and then we're going to recall it and do, you know, whatever, you know, The Proposal, whatever. It's just always like two conflicting people who somehow like feel that they need to find love or whatever. Like that was the standard.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. Like I said, my point about Ryan Reynolds earlier was that he had a pretty good run at it for a while, and it was like The Proposal, and there was one other one where he wasn't kicking down the door at the box office yet. He was, most of his movies were not like runaway successes. He had a likability to him that kind of was like, he's in that.
He made just enough money, or he made the studios just enough money to get him another job.
Yeah. So, good question though. Good question.
Let's see.
Yeah, Hugh Grant would be the
Let's see what else we got. Okay, so we've all been there before. You're watching a movie with your family. It's getting a little hot and steamy, and then all of a sudden, Dad puts his hand over your eyes like, "You can't watch this, kid. what's the most uncomfortable, or what was the first uncomfortably watched sex scene with parents or adults?
I don't necessarily remember. I know that there's me and Batman Returns have a long history together. I feel like that might, I feel like some reason, but I don't know if I was getting my eyes shielded for other reasons. I really don't remember. There was never, Dad let us watch some things that were, but I sometimes forget, like, oh, there's boobs in this movie. You kind of forget, you know, it'd be a comedy movie. And it's like, oh, whoops. Don't say nothing.
Right. Don't tell your mother.
Yeah. I honestly don't remember of it being like completely inappropriate. I know that it exists. And I want to say it's Batman Returns. Okay. But yeah, I want to say it's Batman Returns, but.
Okay. All right. All right.
That movie scared me already, though. I'll tell you that story another
day. That's a whole other story. But,
so I might have been on edge already. So maybe that's just trauma from that movie flooding its way into a memory that doesn't really exist, which I forget what that effect is called, but whatever. So, anyways.
It's called Inception?
Yeah. Bomb. Yeah, I can't really think of one, though. What about you?
There's a scene in Hot Shots Part 2 where Charlie Sheen is... To be fair, the scene is shot for comedic effect. Like
that's where they ripped off Top Gun.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And Apocalypse Now and a bunch of other stuff. Yeah. But there's a scene where it's the Tom Cruise, Kelly McGinnis scene where he seduces her at the base, and then they go back to her place and Take My Breath Away goes on and all that.
He's shooting cherries in her mouth from her belly button.
Exactly. But there's a scene where she walks up, like he's strapped to the bed and she walks up a flight of stairs, and like there's like, they don't show boob or anything, but it's all like side boob or implied boob. The best kind of boob.
Yeah. Side boob. I just love that. Some Family Guy reference. He's like, this is the Peter Griffin side boob hour. And Lois comes and kicks the crap out of him.
Yeah. So anyway, there's a scene where she's walking up and you can see like her bare butt or whatever. And I remember watching that with Dad. And I was probably, 12 or 13 at the time, like right at the right age where it was like the wind would blow and I'd get a, you know, little semi-chub.
Yeah.
You know, like just raging hormones.
All
the
time.
She's half naked. Oh, no. And I just remember sitting there looking at Dad, looking at me, looking at the TV, just being like, don't look over and see that I'm half stocked right now, please.
At least a quarter chub. Oh, that brought that knocked memory loose. A scene that I always found really hot. Is in, and I never
Faces
told.
Faces of Death?
No.
That's a hard wank. I'm not going to lie.
No, there's a scene in Robin Hood Men in Tights where they're trying to get the chastity belt off of Maid Marian and they get a jackhammer. And the way she talks, she's like, it will never work. I always thought that was kind of hot.
That's not bad. I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So last question. Last one I got. What is the most anti-romantic film?
Anti-romance?
Mm-hmm.
There's sections of Forgetting Sarah Marshall that I think are anti. It's not by the end of the movie.
Okay.
But that movie.
Just the crushing defeat of being left alone and not knowing we were so intertwined and now my world is directionless.
And now I have the freshest cereal. I love the way it says. I have the freshest cereal. Shout out to that movie. I don't know, most anti-romantic, like anti-love.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I really don't know. Most movies that set out to show that end up like the whole journey of the protagonist is that they find love when they are least looking for it,
or at a
chance to destroy it. You know,
he was a business executive with no time.
It's like
she was a single mom with no time for silliness.
Yeah, it's like The Wedding Singer.
Right. Oh yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean Blue Valentine. That one, I was Michelle. God, what's her name?
Michelle Monaghan.
Yes,
Michelle Monaghan.
Is that who I was thinking of earlier? Yeah,
I don't know.
Blue Valentine. Whatever. The one with Ryan Gosling. That's a movie about. It's a young couple that gets together, and then it just shows the kind of three parts of them getting together, them having a kid unexpectedly, and then sadly it doesn't end that well. And by the end of it, it's just, you're like, man, it's a very realistic story, but it's not a happy ending.
Okay.
I mean, everybody walks away very much so scathed, but still alive and everything, but it's pretty You're like, what's the point of all this? Like, we have these incredible highs just to have the stool kicked out from underneath us, mm-hmm. you know? So that movie's pretty high on the list when it comes to that, but it's a really good movie in the sense of it tells the whole story. Okay. Other than anti-romance, nothing I can think of is like, they usually come around by the end of it, you know? Like right. The Wedding Singer, like I said, with Adam Sandler. Forgetting Sarah Marshall, there's parts of it that are very anti, but meh.
So yeah. The one that comes to mind for me the most is The Lobster with Colin really? Yeah. Farrell. Basically, the whole plot of the movie is it's a world where if you don't find a mate or a soulmate or get married by the time, I think it's like 35 or something like that, you turn into an animal.
Yeah, they turn you into an animal of your choosing.
Right, right. And so it's Colin Farrell, and it's like the last week that he has to make, you know, to find someone. So he goes to this resort that's designed for people like him who have never found anybody. And it's just this depressing, like, I mean, there's suicides in it, and it's just, it's all philosophical, but it's all like surface level, like greeting card bullshit, and it's just such a drag of a movie. There's no emotionality in it. It paints not just a bleak picture of romance and sexuality and stuff like that, but of like life in general. It's just this nihilistic, what the fuck does it all matter? And I was like, I mean, trying to get my dick hard over here, you know.
It's Yorgos Lanthimos, right?
Yes,
is the guy that directed what's the movie? Poor Things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I fell asleep during that movie. I watched it a lot, and it was interesting in the sense of I'll watch anything once, and I remember it being really original. I was like, all right, well, I've never seen anything like this. Then I just remember, I think I still might have been drinking at the time, mm-hmm. and I remember like trying to get into it, and I think I finally passed out or whatever, but I just remember being like, this just goes on and on and on, doesn't it?
It's a slog, dude. Yeah. Like, very rarely do I say that, like, a movie has no redeeming qualities. That movie it's boring, it's long, it's maybe beautifully well shot, but
you're like, is it though?
Yeah, it's at that point, it's just, you know, lots of wide shots of just very gorgeous scenery. So it's like, okay, I mean, you had a good location scout. What are you really showing me here? You know?
Like I said, original, but really strange. I couldn't keep up.
It is original. I've never seen a movie like that, and I never want to again.
There you go.
Let's see. The Notebook is another one.
It's anti-romance, you think?
I think so.
Why is that?
Because, I mean, the whole point was, I mean, he ends up losing her regardless, you know? It's
loved and lost and never have lost, and never loved at all.
Fuck that.
I don't know. I might politely disagree with that one.
And then another most anti-romantic film is My Father, the Hero.
I don't know what that is.
It is Gerard Depardieu and a very young Katherine Heigl. They take a vacation on the south of France, and she falls in love with some, she's like 15 years old or 16 years old. She falls in love with some like 21-year-old lifeguard. And instead of telling him that Gerard Depardieu is her father, she tells him that he's her lover.
Oh, Lord.
And so, of course, now the whole resort starts thinking that he's a pedophile and, you know, and she has to maintain this facade. Not real romantic in any way, because even, like, let's say long term that this 21-year-old is like, hey, yeah, for a 15-year-old, you're pretty hot. First of all, ew. But also, like, you're also crazy enough to implicate your father in a very serious crime. So, like, can't wait to date you.
Yeah, I'm not going to say paint with too wide of a paintbrush here, or maybe I'll paint wide enough where you can understand, but the idea of French people and dating young is not so uncommon over there. It's not, well, I mean,
it was originally a French movie.
That's like, what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of movies that are French movies that have, like, for example, Leon the Professional, Luc Besson.
Lolita.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. So anyways. Seems to be a common theme in a lot of French movies about young love and this. And so I was like, all right, what are you really trying to say here? But I don't know. So I just know that's where Woody Allen went after he was accused of doing what he did. And he found some solace there. And it was more
social. Was it Woody Allen? It was Woody Allen. Roman Polanski.
Oh, yeah. And Woody Allen probably went there too. Yeah, Roman Polanski definitely went to France. Like I said, but there was a, and I don't know. Obviously, I've never been to France. I know at one point it was more socially acceptable to a degree, not wild shit, but like, you know, being 14 and 15 was like at the time a suitable age. And I don't know what the pulse over there is now, but I know some of these movies we're talking about are a little bit long in the tooth, so I don't know. All weird shit to me, though. Yeah, I wouldn't want to watch that movie.
Yeah, it's definitely it's a buzzkill.
Yeah, it sounds like
and
it.
And it's just weird. It's just like, ew. Like, why would you think this would work? Like, ew. Anyway, so on that note.
I guess. yeah.
What a weird transition.
Yeah, weird transition.
How do we shift from that?
Yeah, anyways. Let's shift. Yeah, we got
so
to
anyways,
pivot now.
Doggy style.
Anyways, doggy style.
So let's take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll deep dive into something we've both been watching recently, the classic Tim Meadows vehicle, The Ladies' Man.
Get you a bottle of Courvoisier Cognac, and we will be right back.
Out of butt lotion.
Where do you find such things?
Mostly Walmart, Kmart, many fine retail stores.
All right, my friends. We are here to talk about the great, excuse me, while I sip my bottle of Courvoisier Cognac.
It's vitamin water, don't worry.
No, we are here to talk about The Ladies' Man, the movie.
Finally!
Yes, this is a movie that, as you very well know, you've heard it. Me talk about it many times. It's super near and dear to my heart. Just a quick couple things of house cleaning. It was it stemmed from a Saturday Night Live skit written by the incomparable Tim Meadows, who was on the cast for a long time up until Keenan recently beat him. He was one of the longest tenured cast members
for sure,
and one of the longest writers on the show for a while too. So Tim Meadows, I think it appeared in '97 and '98, and then kind of carried on from there in that season, the '97-'98 run. Tim Meadows told a story recently on Seth Meyers about the inception of The Ladies' Man and how he came up with it. And he was
okay.
Saying, while all my other friends were off making multi-$100 million movies, he was doing prank phone calls to local TV shows and to call-in radio shows.
Uh-huh.
And originally, he loved the voice. He came up with the voice, and he just thought it was really funny.
I like him already. Yeah. A man after my own heart.
And so he originally named
I've got a voice. I just need a character.
And I used to do a pretty mean Leon Phelps when I did it all the time. When I watched this movie every day, I was pretty consistent with it. So I'll try not to butcher it, but I won't be able to help myself today.
Right.
But originally, the guy's name was Rutiger.
Rutiger?
Yeah, and they said because I needed a good name to be able to get through. It wasn't like they really had a tough screening process back then, so I just needed a good name. It would be like, and on the phone we have Rutiger. And he just asked him really silly things on the air. For example, once he got through in a local access show, and he was talking to a water polo team or like a volleyball team or something like
okay.
that. And he learned kind of then that the secret to this character is to have people say something and him not really acknowledge what they just said. So
okay.
Like, oh yeah, volleyball. That's pretty cool. Let me see. Can you show me your feet by any chance? And they're like, no, I'm not going to show my feet. Okay, yeah, that's cool. We're moving on. And they'll just goes right into the next thing. And so he really just fell in love with this voice, and it became The Ladies' Man. Once he just started finding himself calling more and more into these local access
that's
shows.
Hysterical.
Yes, yeah, so it was Rutiger was the original one. So, no, you can't show me your feet. Okay, yeah, well, that's cool. So it kind of became the impetus of it, man. And he also talked about The Ladies' Man, which, again, we always say that we are not going to do a plot for plot on this movie. Just go watch it. It's 90 minutes. Right. You'll be back. We'll
Should we do at least a plot summary or like a plot impetus?
Yeah, in a second we can.
Okay.
He was talking also about doing a Ladies' Man reboot. The post Me Too era.
Oh, and Lord.
How Leon Phelps might fit in. And it was funny that he already figured out the formula for how to do it, which obviously I'm just a silly voice kind of guy. If you can pull it off and I like the things that you choose to say. But he was talking about in the ladies man, the post Me Too era, you have to say the statements and then you immediately retract the statements. Be like, so baby, I was thinking about making love to you. If that's cool, obviously I would need your permission right. on sorts of things. But I would enjoy you coming back to my house and right. making dirty love. But if you got a boyfriend or anything, that's cool too. I'm not trying to press the issue. Right. So you immediately put
you
it
You are
up
not
there.
Contractually obligated.
And you would, of course, have a lot of say in the love-making actions and events that were going at the house. So, yeah, so it's just funny to me conceptually about him immediately saying what he would want to say and then immediately walking it back. Immediately saying it, immediately walking it back. So,
that's hysterical.
Yeah, it's obviously somebody's caliber of Tim Meadows, who is on the What You Been Watching Hall of Fame for this
Always.
Movie. And Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story.
And Mean Girls.
And Mean Girls, yeah. And that's, you need three hits for us.
So, we have a very low bar.
It's just is what the role means to us. It's like Margot Martindale in Walk Hard as well. Like,
oh,
her,
yeah.
Her just saying, we're going to light us the candle tonight. Right. We're like, it's comedic genius what you just did. But yeah, just a quick synopsis of it. Ultimately, Leon Phelps is a guy who works at a radio station. He comes on at 2 in the morning, and he is the one who, it's kind of like Loveline with Dr.
Yeah.
Drew back
yeah.
in the day. He is there to answer all your romantic queries. And he gets fired from the station because he has a dirty potty mouth. And it's the quest of him going to go find a job. And in the process of him finding a job, he has sex and something randomly works out. He gets a letter from a woman, a mystery woman, who says, Leon, I still love you. When you did what you did to me in this laundry room, I think about it every night. Come run away with me. I have enough money to travel around the world, blah, blah, blah. So it's his quest.
Signed your sweet thing.
Signed sweet thing. It's
right.
again, it's a mystery. And he calls everyone sweet thing. So then he, the third act is him just trying to find this mystery woman.
Going through all of his prior hookups and, you know,
his
like...
His little black book.
Right.
Which is
right.
a phone book. and that's what... And in the process, he kind of falls for his co-producer, Julie. God, what's her name? The actress's name?
Karen Parsons.
Karen Parsons, thank you. Yeah,
yes,
I was like,
yeah.
thinking Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
I was going to say, you might also know her as... what was the character's name in Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
We're bad at this. We should have... I remember her more as Julie now.
That's right.
The Ladies
that's
Man.
Right.
But... The older sister on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Golly, I can't remember. But either way, you'll know her face second you see her.
That's right.
So yeah, that's the basic process. And they end up falling for each other at the very end of the movie. But that's it. And him just running around being silly. So the one thing I can appreciate it is it has a pretty good cast. It has Billy Dee Williams makes an appearance. There's a lot of cameos from like the kids in the hall, other Saturday Night Live members.
Yeah,
Chris
yeah,
Parnell
yeah.
shows up. John Witherspoon. Is in it. Right. Scrap Iron, you my man.
Is that Reese Witherspoon's father?
Yes, it is.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Because they coordinate. So, yeah, it's a good cast, but...
Billy Dee Williams. Oh,
yeah,
let
Billy
us
Dee
not
Williams,
forget
yeah.
Billy Dee Williams.
I think I said him first, but
yeah.
either way.
Julianne Moore.
Yeah, she
Will
makes
Ferrell.
I was going to bring that up later. That
okay.
Julianne
okay.
Moore, we were talking about cameos the other week, which one we like. I forgot Julianne Moore in The Ladies Man.
That's right.
Because she did so well on the Saturday Night Live performance that they brought her back for the movie. So, big shout
really?
Out to her. Yeah, hers is like the all-time one, where she actually sits down with The Ladies Man when she hosted. Hers is all-time of that show. So
Okay. Because I remember the Helen Hunt one, where he sat down with... there was a phone call that came in that was like, my penis is only 3 inches long and I'm told that that's normal, but I just have questions. And he was like, yeah, that's nothing to be embarrassed about. And she goes, yeah, it is.
No. Julianne Moore crushes it. So you can find that on YouTube, I'm sure. But yeah, she's in it as well. I forgot what I was going to say now. But the thing I do appreciate about this movie is they don't spend a lot of time on backstory. Billy Dee Williams himself gives a quick narrator, a fourth wall break, which kind of seamlessly goes back into the movie when Leon Phelps interrupts him, but just gives a quick backstory about how there was a young man abandoned by his father, found by a Hugh Hefner type. He was allowed to have anything he wanted except, obviously, Hugh Hefner type's wife.
Right.
Sure enough, Liam being Leon found his way to the wife and got kicked out of the house and was made his way ever since. And why is that? Because the ladies love Leon Phelps.
That's right.
So, and that's the quick synopsis. And then really why I like this movie so much is it's you just get to see the character. You get to see him be the silly character that I'm here for the
yeah.
whole time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's not bogged down. Like, it's just there are plot points and you see him evolve a little bit, but it's really just him being silly the whole time.
I would actually argue that the weakest points of the movie unfortunately come when they try to insert a plot as opposed to just letting Leon Phelps be Leon Phelps. You know, like, I would just love a whole movie where it's just him running through his Rolodex of bus station skanks and Burger King skanks and, you know, Hot Topic skanks. But when they try to insert the plot, that's the weakest part of this movie, unfortunately.
A little,
in my opinion.
A little bit. You could take the idea of Will Ferrell's character out if the conflict is he's looking for this woman, this sweet thing.
Right, right.
This mystery sweet thing for the whole movie. And then the conflict then just becomes he's not looking at the woman that he truly loves and Julie being there the whole time. And the conflict really arrives when the two things clash at the same time. He breaks Julie's heart because they finally kiss.
Right.
And then at the same time, like within a matter of minutes, he goes and
literally gets, the next line.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, honey, DeLune.
Right.
That is it. I am rich.
Right. He figures out who the mystery woman was and like immediately just abandons Julie.
Yeah. And so that the movie would still work that way. Sure, it adds an extra layer of, oh, and all the husbands of all the women he's been sleeping with have formed a coalition and they're ready to kill the ladies' man and sing a musical number about it. So,
yeah, right. By the way, is one of my favorite scenes in the entire movie is when they break into the Bob Fosse, like, tonight we've come to kill the ladies' man. Like, a whole song and dance number about it. I mean, you know, there's a little Broadway star inside of me that just went, yes, we love this part.
I'm gonna kill that dirty bastard. Yeah. Yeah. No, the movie works, man. And if it does not overstay its welcome, certainly. It's perfect runtime. 90 minutes in and out.
I agree. And that's one of the problems with SNL movies is, like, it's hard to translate, a 6 to 10 minute bit character who's just used to espousing, you know, catchphrases.
A one-liner, yeah.
One-liners into a two-hour movie or an hour-and-a-half movie.
Like, right.
I think that this one may not hit all of the marks it intended to do, but it makes a very valiant attempt. Like, way more than, like, Night at the Roxbury or He Who Shall Not Be Named.
Yeah. Michael leaned. I thought I was in trouble for a second. Yeah.
I still hate you for that one.
You will continue to. Vengeance is sweet. Slow is the blade. Penetrate. I've said this before when very early on, I think episode like 4 or 5, we were talking about when we still had the fish tank in the background.
That's right. Yeah.
Go back and listen to those. Thank you for those who dealt with us. Pardon our dust. But this is an underrated one to me.
Oh, and for sure.
This is an underrated one to me. I did learn something, though, in this movie and why it – I guess I'll talk about how this movie gained so much popularity amongst our social circle.
Sure, go ahead.
So I was a fan of this – actually, this was my generation of Saturday Night Live. Is this and up until, like, when Bill Hader and all them left and Kristen Wiig left, I was kind of out of it, but that run was so good. I hang on a little longer than I should have.
Yeah, it's the post post Joe Piscopo and like maybe
Delta, can I help you? Help you? It's post
it was
really like Mike Myers was the kind of the beginning of it, and really,
but he was the old school veteran at that
point.
Right,
yeah,
right,
like
right.
I remember Chris Rock being on there, but also we would also rent Saturday, like the best of Saturday Night Live tape.
Sure.
So it was a big deal in our house.
Right.
But like really the Will Ferrell era.
Wow, you want to take 2 on that?
No,
one?
We're good. Let's plow right ahead. Was really my run. So, and Tim Meadows was the lead writer on so many of those.
Kristen Wiig, Sherry O'Terry.
Well, that was later. Like, Sherry O'Terry was that era as well, but this was it. And so, I think it's an underrated SNL movie, personally.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you how the movie kind of transcended our social circle. So, we knew about this movie. I had a really good friend going up. What is his name? Seth Rico.
Mm-hmm.
Seth Rico was one of my best buddies growing up. And his brother was telling us about this movie, The Ladies' Man. And I knew the character, obviously, but I didn't realize it was rated R. And Seth was really good at doing voices. He would do silly voices really well. And so he could really do a good Leon Phelps.
Okay.
And so he would start to adopt that into some of our conversations. And so what I wanted to see about this movie was more like the legend of this movie had already brewed in my head longer than either one of us had seen it.
Sure.
Because we hadn't seen it yet because it was rated R. Or I guess he hadn't. But we slowly but surely did. We got our hands on a copy pretty quickly after. And we watched it. And just what we thought we knew about the movie and this character We fell in love with it immediately.
Right.
And
right,
so
right.
I described this movie as, in our circle, a sexually transmitted comedy, in the sense of, in the sense of, it got passed on to one of you, from the person who had it last, from the person who got it. But the thing is, you won't get it, and this is why this analogy goes a little further. You won't get it unless you watch it with one of us.
Sure, sure, sure. Like, it's not necessarily that it's a great comedy or whatever. It's watching it with one of us, because I watched it with you and saw the things that you loved about it, and immediately that's what influenced me to, you know, the things that I love about the movie and stuff like that. But I would have, you know, I would add my own things to it, like, oh, but also that part where he did XYZ, and then that I would pass it on to my girlfriend, who would pass it on to her best friend.
Yeah.
But like, as long as you saw it with one of the Dudley brothers, or like our, one of our social circles, yeah, like that was the key of enjoyment of this movie.
And I we put that theory to the test. Shout out, I'm going to bring up a very important man to me, the one whose opinion I respect the most here in terms of ladies' man talk. Shout out to DJ Mike Check, if you're listening. Appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah.
It was one of those things where I had talked about the movie, and me and him had a really good rapport. There was a couple things that went that made Mike and I just go from being coworkers at the old musical Sonny's
right.
to damn near brothers, you know?
Sure.
And the ladies' man was one of them. Actually, the first part of that, the cog in that gear, was probably Kanye West, the College Dropout. So
sure.
I associate that with him because nobody else was listening to it except me and him. So we just quote the hook. So it became that and the ladies' man. And so when I watched it with Mike, he loved it. And like it grew. Like the more you talked about it, you know, the more we could quote things. Well, what is that? It was a joke between us.
Right.
And we finally loaned it to a good friend of ours who I'll change her name, but we called her Holly Berry. We loaned the movie to Holly Berry, and she watched it by herself. And she was like, I thought it was the dumbest fucking movie I've seen, you know? And we've had that reaction. We make people watch it by themselves. It's nothing. But then they watch it with one of us, and that's why I say that's when you get it. That's and then you get the disease of Leon Phelps. You're like, oh, this shit is so silly. And like the way you talk, the way like you light up about it. And so she's like, you have to watch it with one of you. And so that's why it kind of permeates, and that's why it was consistently watched in our house. And like our good friend Jeremy Bedore would not have gotten this movie if he didn't watch it with one of us.
For sure.
And he would always call me, be like, just talk like Leon Phelps. Just do, like, you can talk about anything. Just keep going. Like,
say the line, Bart.
Yeah.
Say the line.
Yeah. And so we would just, it was a constant thing. And so that's really why this movie became so important to me, is it's like this certain niche group of people that this movie doesn't survive on its own outside of us, but there was something about our passion for it that really just gave it legs still to this day.
Like, it is infectious. It is. It is like, you watch it and like, yeah, it's funny, you might get a chuckle, but then you see the things that we love, and like to hear us quote it, you know, just ad nauseum, and the things that we find funny. And then it's not even, a lot of it isn't even definable. Like I couldn't break down why that scene is funny, other than like, well, because he's being silly, and like that just amuses me. Like, why would he say that line the way he said it at that particular time?
The lisp and everything, really, it's his lisp and his delivery of the lines.
Oh, he's so scientific with stuff.
It's so funny though.
I don't care what you say, chlamydia is a soup. I've seen it on the grocery store shelves.
We'll talk about his scientific punches, but I wanted to give DJ Mike Check just a bit of love, because I had called him, said, well, what was it important to you about it? And the idea, and I found this interesting, and the idea of the part that he found hilarious is the conception of it, just in general. So there's this guy who comes on at 2:00 in the morning, starts drinking Cavassier on the air, and his whole thing is like, I'm going to give out romantic idea, you know, take romantic calls.
Who would ever start drinking during a recording of Vital Information?
Like I said, this movie is near and dear to our hearts. And so he wants to know more about the man. Like, what does the guy that would come on at 2 in the morning drinking Cavassier, like, what does this guy look like? What is the portrait of this man?
What's his backstory?
And of course, he's stuck in the 70s. Of course, he lives on a houseboat. And he was saying to me, like, that's
not just a houseboat, but a houseboat with a waterbed.
Yeah, a houseboat, like, the houseboat with a waterbed, because there's more motion in the ocean. Like, to give relationship advice, like, what kind of, as we would always joke in the movie, who would do this? Who would do this? So, and he said as well that the SNL sketch kind of drew it to him, but he had a lot of favorite parts that we're going to talk about, but I just thought it was interesting that it really is just a snapshot into this guy's life. Like, what kind of person would want to do this? And then you check the boxes and peek behind the curtain, you're like, fucking, of course right, it's this right, guy. So right. From conceptually, right. It's genuinely
whatever
very
I
funny.
Had pictured. Whatever I had pictured in my head, that guy fits the bill.
Like, right. Right. So before we just start rattling off our favorite parts and things that we're going to try to not just quote things here, but it's going to happen naturally a little bit. What is it about this movie? Like, how did you get into it? I mean, talk the director. You tell a little bit about, because I know we kind of skipped some of that, if you wanted to backtrack. Or,
I mean, we can talk about basic facts right now. So released in 2000.
Okay.
Directed by Reginald Hudlin, who you may not know, but I guarantee you've seen some of his work, especially in the early 90s. He was the director of Boomerang. He was the director of the House Party series 1, 2, and 3.
Oh, nice.
And, strangely enough, Serving Sarah, the Elizabeth Hurley.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah. Which, another weird 90s rom-com that
yeah
goes pretty off the rails. Anyway... released in 2000 with a budget of, what would you guess?
I know it lost money. I've Googled this enough times. Okay, okay. It's about 23, 24 million, something like that.
24 million yeah. budget, and it garnered 13.5, a little more than 13.5 in gross domestic, which is, by all accounts, a flop.
You lost your ass on that
one. Yeah. Interestingly enough, this was the very last SNL movie to be released until almost, I want to say, like 10 or 12 years later with MacGruber.
Which, thank you for that. Another all-time classic.
Sure. We'll just have to agree and disagree on that one.
Quick thing on the director, Reginald Hudlin, just for those, this is how deep my lore goes. And when I say I know weird stuff about weird things, there's an episode of The Boondocks where they talk about BET as Black Evil Television. All right? Because for whatever reason, go watch the episode. And they make fun of somebody called Wedgie. And there's Wedgie. They're referring to Reginald Hudlin, the director of this, because he went on to be like director of programming at BET. And the Boondocks originally had a deal with him to potentially either be on BET or, and when he took the job, he just kind of bailed on him. And so he had producer credits for a lot of the show. And Aaron Magruder was like, you didn't do anything. You bailed. And so they just kind of make a lot of fun of him. And so when you see them joking on the Boondocks about Wedgie, who, what's his name? Donald Faison.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He does the voice of him. That's who they're making fun of. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And he's also the guy at the very end of the movie when he's like, when he goes to get his suit from Aloysius and he's like, this is the deepest chocolate you got. He's like, yeah, that's German chocolate. That's the director as well.
Ah, okay. So, okay. The suit maker. Yeah.
Me knowing weird things about stuff.
Gotcha. That interesting.
I have a platform for. So all that being said, again,
tangent aside,
which I'm so grateful I have a platform to spew my nonsense of behind the scenes DVD stuff. What is it about this movie that because you were in the Coast Guard when this movie started to blow up in our circles, it started to, and then you came back and you're like, oh, this is a whole thing now.
Oh yeah, yeah. I literally remember coming back and everybody was quoting it, and I was like, I want to be part of the inside joke. What? And then, like I said, I sat down and watched it with you, and just seeing the joy and the rapture on your face in quoting this movie line for line, and your breakdown of why it was so funny. I mean, like, again, like the simple thing of he lives on a houseboat, but yet he has a waterbed.
That did not make sense.
The scene where, you know, he's running through his little black book, and he shows up, and you know, he shows up and opens the door, and she just smacks him, and then he literally goes to the next door down in the apartment and knocks on the door because he's trying to run through all the skanks.
Yeah.
His terminology, you know, skanctuary.
Yes. The L.A. Forum, because this is where the magic happened.
Magic
happened once on that chair that you're touching right now. Once in that paper waste basket.
That's right. And once the love happened on those curtains, but that was a long shot for old Leo.
Long shot.
It's just, it's such a quotable movie that it's infected my brain, you know? Like, there's just certain things that I say, you know, like anytime I walk by a piano, I have to touch it and go, I am Julie's piano.
That
I am Julie's piano.
That has more. We would yell that. That's one of the bursts of musical sunnies where we used to work, was yelling that in the kitchen.
Yeah, just shit like that. It's just, yeah. God, what's another good one? Oh, anytime someone's disappointed in me, I'll go, so you don't want a fish sandwich?
So you don't want, yes. His pickup lines are that of brilliance. And
they are. They're amazing.
It was just the first time that I had heard, when I said that line to the movie, to I think it was Aunt Lorraine, actually. I was just like, talked about, hey, there, sweet thing, can I buy you a fish sandwich? It was the way I delivered it at the time, where I guess she didn't know anything about the movie, and she just was like, yes, more of this, more of this. And that's why her and Beedor would always call me and be like, just do the voice, I don't care.
Right,
just
right,
just
right,
more,
right.
More, 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 more. Yeah, we can talk about I just was curious, like, what about it, you know, like, in terms of what it means to you, and just, because I know I always joke about, like, oh, I base my life off this movie, and I'll talk about the past. And I know you've not said that about this movie. I know this movie has influenced your life
in
some ways.
Yeah,
but
in a big, bad way. Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
I just know, for me, there's something earnest about Leon Phelps. There's an earnesty to him that I know a lot of people with his flaws, you know,
okay,
of just fornicators that are just broken people.
Fornicators and
yeah.
Sodomites.
But, like, he doesn't, and shout out to a person I mentioned earlier, I won't put his secrets out there, but he's very much so the same way of, like, listen, I am trying to sleep with you. Like, don't
oh, when he meets a girl?
Yeah, when he meets a girl, like, I don't. Don't get all drunk around me. Don't and flirty. Don't
right,
do
right.
this. Like, don't sleep.
If you give me a whiff of it, I'm going to take a bite.
Yeah, we're not talking about the dreaded, you know, obviously it's consensual. We're not
right,
saying
right,
anything
yeah,
like
yeah.
that. But
right. There's no implications.
Yeah, yeah. But no, he's like, don't. My goal, and it's there's something about being so straightforward and knowing the motivations of, like, yeah, I'm trying to bone. Like, that's what
yeah.
it is. Don't get it twisted. If I'm a nice guy, I'm a nice guy. I'm still just a nice guy that's trying to bone you.
Right.
Like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
And so there's something that I kind of respect about it. And he actually is a good dude, and he really is kind of broken.
Oh, he's completely broken. I actually have a...
And he's very honest. So
he is. I actually sat down. I got a little bit stony baloney, watched the movie, and I actually did a breakdown of the Leon Phelps character and sort of his character arc.
Okay, well, fire it up, man, because I can talk this movie all day. I know we can't, but...
Oh, we can.
Yeah. We can come back to this movie as many
sure.
times as we want.
So, basically, Leon Phelps, he, in my opinion, and I could be wrong on this, I'm not a psychologist. We ain't scientists, Doc.
Yes.
But he doesn't want to cause pain. He just
right.
wants to spread pleasure, but especially his own, you know? Like, he's a little bit narcissistic, but it's only because he honestly believes that he is, like, the world's greatest lover, and so why wouldn't he share that gift? Like, he's not doing it maliciously or to try and hurt women or to try and, you know, get one over on him. I mean, like you said, he's very, very honest about, you know, there's the scene of, you know, if we have boned and you are super rich, meet me by the nacho cart. Also, if we have not boned and you are super rich, meet me by the nacho cart.
It's know, my, like, one of my favorite scenes.
It's
goes to Cincinnati or Chicago Cubs game, just gets on the PA and says that. But anyways, go ahead. Yeah, you're talking about the not want to hurt, but
yeah, like essentially what it breaks down to is he's a man essentially looking for love to cease his own trauma. You know, like as we said, he was abandoned as a child. He was technically, you know, sexually abused, living in the pseudo Playboy mansion.
Right.
You know, like he. When he got kicked out, he was 15 years old, and he fell in love with an older woman that's, you know, that's very, you know,
yeah, and
it's not an appropriate relationship.
Yeah,
let's
put
it that way.
I got
you. So, and more than that, you know, he's got the toxic masculinity, it's in a weird way, it's not his fault. Like, that's all he really knows. Like, he doesn't know how to not make love transactional, like vis-a-vis sex.
It's a survival technique.
For sure. And
they say even he got by because the ladies love Leon Phelps.
Right, yeah. Right. I mean, it's narcissistic, but I don't think it's intentional. You know, it. Like I said, his love is both transactional and it's also forbidden in terms of he only goes for unavailable women. You know, like
yeah.
He's not happy unless there's a challenge.
He does go for the lowliest bus station skank, so I might push back on that one a little bit. But for the sake of this movie, you're right.
Well, he talks about it, but within the terms of the movie...
There's a coalition of men that are willing to kill him that are married. So, yeah.
Within the terms of the... Like, separating the skit where he just talks about banging anybody versus what we see in the movie where it's almost exclusively married women.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
That's true.
So there's a little bit of that in terms of, you know, it's narcissistic and destructive in terms of he only cares about his own gratification regardless of the impact on others' feelings and consequences. You know, like he doesn't care if they're married. He doesn't like he wants to give women pleasure, but that's not necessarily the best benefit or like it's not necessarily a good act, you know?
Yeah.
Because the fallout from all of that shatters lives and breaks up marriages, and
which is kind of
within the concept of the movie, they form a literal lynch mob in order to take out the ladies' man,
which is his character arc as well. Is it's the whole redemption thing of, you know, him kind of changing the air of his ways, which they shoehorn it in, but it's a comedy, so I don't really give a shit. Like, they got to wrap it up in the next 10 minutes. They're like, ah, okay, he had an epiphany because now he loves Julie. Okay, all's forgiven, so whatever.
But even that kind of comes out of left field.
It does, but it's a comedy. I don't care. I'm not looking for to be moved by self-revelation. Like, they write it in. He's like, hey, you know, and he kind of points out to the other guys, like, yes, I did fix you. If you have mothers and wives and sisters, yes, I sexed them up a little bit. And they attack him. And he said, and most times, it was really good. And then he tells them, like, hey, well, look, I didn't force myself upon them. It wasn't, right. You know, I just offered something you didn't.
Right, right.
So,
right,
like,
right.
You can kill me all you want, but, like, you're still going to be lacking the thing that you're not giving your wife. And so he does kind of flip the mirror back on him or his axe. But he even says, like, but, you know, I've learned now in the last little bit that, like, I was so caught up in being Leon Phelps, the ladies' man, I forgot about being Leon Phelps, the man. And so they shoehorn it in, but, like, it's the redemption.
How else do you end that movie?
I don't really care.
Right,
you know,
right, 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 right. Let's see. What else do I have? He's a con artist who fell for his own hype, you know? Like,
wow.
He talked himself into being the ladies' man,
like,
and now he has to perform as the ladies' man.
Yeah, like the climax. I was so caught up in being
right.
Good eye for that. I know you wrote that before I said this. So. Truly.
And then, you know, like I said, he's a broken individual. He's desperate for attention. He's so alone and so wary of the world that he'll seek attention and
Accolades,
yes. I could not think of the word.
No, you're good.
Accolades from, you know, even anonymous strangers, you know, like you said, the lowliest bus station skanks, his radio audience, bar patrons. But even beyond that, he seeks attention, and he's narcissistic, and he's a little bit manipulative. Like, he can turn... Like you said, kind of turn the mirror back on you and be like, well, if you'd just been giving him the good, sweet loving the whole time, I wouldn't have to be here. But he's very honest about what he is. You know, he calls himself every time he introduces himself, I'm Leon Phelps, the ladies' man. You know, like he makes no bones about it. Well, quite a few bones.
He is one of my favorite lines, the Mother Teresa, but of boning.
That's right. That's right. Yeah,
yeah, so. No, I like that. That's a good character insight, man, truly.
I don't know. I'm not a psychologist.
No, that's good.
But that's just sort of my
in terms
two,
of just a,
two bits on it.
A school, you know, a book report character reflection. Yeah, that's pretty good. Pretty good, man. Well, I guess on that note, I'll just talk about, give you guys some, we always joke about some of the things that have made it into our, into the lexicon of our world, which you've heard so many times on the podcast. We always joke about teaching you some of the inside jokes. So I'm just going to kind of rattle off some of the ones that, yes, in my private life, I may say these, there was a time that they really influenced them, but you'll hear a lot of them have already been said. How are we on time though? We got time to rattle off a couple
more?
Oh
yeah, we got time.
Okay. All right. We're going to rattle off a couple. You might hear me flip some pages. But one of my favorite things that he does in this movie, and they actually, when this movie came out, somebody found it at a Goodwill or something. There was like a little 25-page like read on the toilet kind of book that was written by Tim Meadows as well. So I really dove into this.
Okay.
And they do more of that in the little book. I'll try to find a copy on online or something like that. But when he takes a scientific or medical approach to his descriptions of things on air, there was one where he describes somebody, he's giving romantic advice, and he says, "You suffer from what is called homo unerected," and that means your wang is hugified not by a man, or not by a woman, but by a man.
Right.
And so it's just a silly take like that, where he argues with the dog. He says, "Chlamydia is a soup. I have seen it on the grocery store shelves."
Right, 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 right.
Which, if you've ever hung out with Michael and I, and we're talking about something, and we're like, "Did you see that store? It is on the grocery store shelf." Right. "No, right. I do not care if you are a doctor. It is my opinion."
You are entitled to your opinion or whatever.
Yeah. And we also say, clinically speaking, doing it doggy style always has its advantages. And there's a scene in the movie where he's trying to get a job, and he has this demo tape that he's playing for the heads of the radio station.
Sure.
And why Michael and I come back from break so often, or when we lose our train of thought or whatever, they fast forward the tape. He has another joke about doggy style. Fast forward the tape. Right. And another quick snippet about doggy.
The program manager is losing the shit. He's like, "Well, this is pretty vulgar. Yeah, I don't know if I can put this." And, you know, Julie's trying to play through. There's some raunchy stuff in the beginning, but we clean up at the end. Let's just speed through it.
Yeah, and about after three or four takes, he goes, "Excuse me. Anyways, doggy style." And so anytime you hear Michael and I say, "Anyways, doggy," that is what we're referring to.
We've lost our train of thought and we're trying to get back on track.
Back on the train track. So any of the scientific things that he says, or he says like, "You were kicked in the scrotum," or as they say in medical profession, "the ball sack." Like, it's just his delivery of things like that. It's such nonsense. And we mentioned earlier some of his pickup lines, like, "Hey there, sweet thing, can I buy you a fish sandwich?" Just a fucking really creative line. Right. Or, "Excuse me, was your father a meat burglar? Because it looked like he stole two fine Christmas hams and shoved them down the back of your dress." Like, things like that, they get me every single time.
Anytime someone like gives me a look of disappointment, or they're like, "No," I'm just like, "So you don't want a fish sandwich?"
Oh, man. So those are some of the inside things that we talk about.
What was another? Oh. Anytime I'm with my girlfriend and I'm trying to push up on her and she's just like, "Get the fuck off me. Like, you horn dog, fucking leave me alone." And I'm like, "Yeah, this is the fault of the wang. Like, I should just cut this off." And she'll go, "No, you don't want to do that." I'm like, "Yeah, that's the silliest thing I ever said."
Stupid thing I ever heard. Another one is, he also says later, he's like, the fellas are about to castrate him. And he goes, "But you can't blame the wang." That has been said in some circles and some circumstances that shan't be repeated here. "But you can't blame the wang." And then there's a couple lines in there. Like, I can't see the word Teresa without just going, "Teresa." Like, it's just messed me up. Anytime I refer to my recollection is always 2020 memory. Because it's such a throwaway joke. But he's talking about digging through his black book to find, he said, "Because when I read this letter, I hear a voice. And when I hear this voice, I see a face. And because I have what is called 2020 memory," like, and it's such a silly, stupid line, but it has grown legs in our circle so much that if you're trying to like be correct about something, you will always recall back to your 2020
memory. That's right. That's right. Yeah.
And like, we were playing Dungeons and Dragons the other day, and I got to throw the joke in of one of our members threw a 20, but it was like a couple turns back. And they're like, "Did I roll a?" I go, "Because I have what is called 2020 memory." And like, nobody got what I was talking about except Michael. So that's one that if you hear us say 2020 memory on the show, that's what we're talking about. What else, man? God, there's so many. The nacho car.
Anytime I go to the mailbox and there's a stack of bills. Man. Houseboat bill, electric bill. Ooh, Publishers Clearing House.
Oh, man, no. It that is one that that has gotten legs from anybody that's seen that movie with us. How, when you get the mail, he throws them all in the trash. Houseboat bill.
Oh, he literally throws them in the water.
Yeah, in the water. Utility bill. So just hearing him say utility bill. And I'll often get upset with somebody. There's one of the I forget the cast member's name, but he's one of the guys from
Kids in the Hall.
Kids in the Hall. He plays a mailman.
He's Kevin Rich? Kevin Richards?
I think so, yes.
I think it's Kevin Richards, yeah.
He does this thing.
Richardson, maybe.
He does a thing where he's knocking on Leon's door. I hate the houseboat guy. I hate the houseboat guy.
Oh, he's a mail carrier. Yeah,
he's a mail carrier. I hate the houseboat guy, and he's a mailman. And he goes, oh, look here, I got your mail. He goes, also, I got this telegraph from Jimmy Walker. He goes, dear Leon, stop. The 70s are over. And he looks him dead in his eyes. He goes, stop. So if you hear us go, stop. That's what we're like. There's so many. We're just gonna, but so I mean, we could keep going on and on and on. But like, it all stems from this movie.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And he's like, I'm a clumsy mailman. I'm dropping your mail. And you'll hear Michael say this. What does he say next?
You a bad mailman.
You a bad man.
And this is not from Jimmy Walker.
So if you're leaving a room and you tell me something, and this is not from Jimmy Walker, genuinely upset, man.
Oh man.
It's just, it's great. That's, man. The soundtrack also was killer. Killer 70s soundtrack.
Oh,
Isley
yeah.
Brothers, Ohio Player. Like, it's a variable.
I'm glad you
too.
Brought that up, because, like, that's often underlooked, but that soundtrack sells that movie. I mean,
yeah.
Like, if you're looking for, like, 70s funk, 70s, like, R&B, stuff like that,
yeah.
It is, that's a go-to, man.
Yeah, no, it crushes, man. I still have certain scenes from that movie that when I hear a song, take me there.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, it's an all-timer for us, and it's just, it means so much to me. And there was a summer that I just watched it on such heavy rotation.
The infamous summer.
Ah, yes, and rest in peace to John Witherspoon as well. But
of course, always.
There is one moment that we would do a grave disservice if we didn't talk about, which is our favorite movie, or one of all of our favorite parts from the movie. He is getting in trouble before he gets fired from the station, and he convinces Julie. He's like, don't worry, we're not going to take any more calls. The boss, who played by Eugene Levy, is in this
right.
movie as well. He's trying to cool him off, and he says, no more calls. I'm just going to...
Which, strangely enough, the only SNL movie he was ever involved with, which, given his relationship with Lorne Michaels, is astounding.
Yeah. Yeah, they're best buds. But so he says he's just going to play a little music and get out of there. And he tells Julie to trust him, and he reads... What is the greatest poem of all time?
Okay. The greatest poem ever.
And this is a little something I wrote. What is love? What is this longing in our hearts for togetherness? Is it not the sweetest flower? Does not this flower of love have the fragrant aroma of fine, fine diamonds?
It's the double fine
it's
that
the
gets
double
me.
Fine
it's
that gets
the, it's the fine, fine diamonds.
He says, and this is, you will hear us say this next part all the time. He says, does not the wind love the dirt? You'll get a phone call from somebody and be like, does not the wind love the dirt? Is not love not unlike the unlikely not it is unliking to? The look up?
The visual gag of him going, what?
What? So he wrote it. He says, is not love not unlike the unlikely not it is unlikened to? Are you with someone tonight? Do not question your love. Take your lover by the hand. Release the power within yourself. You heard me. Release the power. Tame the wild cosmos with a whisper. Conquer heaven with one intimate caress. That's right. Don't be shy. Whip out everything you got. And do it in the butt by Leon Phelps. And that, our friends, is the poem that made us fall in love with this movie. It gets me every time. It's the fine, fine diamonds. It's so good.
I mean.
By Leon Phelps. He's so proud of himself after he reads it too.
Not since Thoreau has there been a great American poet.
I want that framed, by the way. And when we get the true What You've Been Watching studio, it will be. So, yeah, man, that movie. Anything else on it, man? We could talk all day. There's a million quotes that are in my lexicon of day-to-day stuff that just people have no – like, I speak way more movie than people realize. Like,
me too, brother.
Yeah.
It is our blessing and our curse.
Like, au contraire, bonjour. I say – oh, you got to forget – when he talks to the woman of the cloth, what's the famous question?
Oh, So how long have you been nunnering?
No, he said, how long you been nunning it up?
Nunning it up, that's it. Well, I've held a missionary position in Bangkok.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to Bangkok?
You've heard this on the show, he says. He says, have you ever gone down the Yellow River? And this is what you've heard on the show a couple of times. One time in the 80s, but I did not enjoy it. So there it is. We're going to fill you in with a little bit of inside baseball there. We teased it a while ago. We'll slowly do this because I'm having a good time doing this.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll slowly cue the audience into some of the references that
more
we
inside
say.
Jokes.
Yeah. We'll dive into Chappelle one day and I'll say what I can. there's a lot of references from a lot. Like this movie alone is really, probably there's not a day that goes by that it's like this, Step Brothers. The Pest has fallen off a little bit, but there's still certain things that
when they catch,
it's you know exactly where that's from. This Half Baked was another one. So man, it's been a pleasure. I could talk to Ladies Man all day though. Anything else you want to talk about on this
movie? I think that covers it, man. That's a pretty good episode, sir.
Shout out to...
I think we've reached the climax.
There it is. And shout out to... they're not on the Legion of Goon, but Will Ferrell's crew does a good job of being comedic goons, which we're taking that word back. I figured out it means something else now.
First of all, fuck you, millennials.
Yeah, no. This is... we're talking about classic gooneries. So they do a good job. They're not in the Legion
of
Goon.
That's my favorite Pornhub page.
I don't
Classic
even know.
Goonery?
I don't even know. I refuse to know just because it means something to me and I can have plausible deniability. But we're taking that word back.
That's right. That's right.
So I appreciate it. So, man, thank you for letting us talk about this movie. The next movie is going to be a solely one for you, but this one is kind of for both of us in a weird
for
way,
sure.
man. There's
for
a
sure.
lot of bonding that happened over this movie, which is something I really appreciate when a movie can bring you and not just your immediate family but friends, and you all have something that you can kind of lean into, and it's not like a well-known one, you know. It's really niche, this one.
I mean,
so.
it's literally the thing that I love the most. It's seeing a movie and watching it with somebody else and trying to explain to them why it means so much to you, you know.
Yeah.
like just the sheer joy that you get out of it, whether it's a silly movie or a poignant movie or an emotionally cathartic movie or whatever it may be, but like something about it catches your eye and catches your heart, and trying to share that with somebody else. So,
it's important. Important. So, yeah, man. Well, brother, on that note, love you. Thank you for reviewing the Ladies'
Man. Of course.
I will give it, you know, all the bottles of Courvoisier Cognac. So,
that's good. I will give it 4 bus station skanks of the highest quality.
Yeah, sophisticated debutante. The way he says debutante. Yeah, anyways. All right, man. Well, on that note, we are going to get out of here. I would recommend that you watch this movie or any other movie. Just watch a movie.
And do it in the butt.